Mini episode 1716 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1716. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, and we have a great guest with us here today, and this goes probably further back than anybody as far as when I worked with them doing any form of broadcasting. This is Dan McDowell, long of the ticket in Dallas, well over 20 years there, kicking ass in the afternoons over a long span of time, now on an independent venture, the Dumb Zone. We'll talk about that, how he got from here to there, but in the setup of this, I do want to mention an awful lot about how, again, the way that Dan does stuff, I've always really sort of cottoned to that, at his approach, and it has been one of a number of influences on me over a period of time. And this goes back to the WHK days in Cleveland. Legendary station, WHK, it was an incarnation at that time, 94 to 96, doing sports talk. And he got to work with one of the great legends of the Cleveland area, Les Levine. I'm very jealous that he got to work with him, much less know him there. And Dan was instrumental at that time as far as, and this was covered recently on a clip that I saw from his show where one of his old colleagues was on with him, where they were talking about this again, that the sound of the station, that Dan was instrumental to it as far as doing drops and some of the imaging and some of the things that weren't so commonplace back at that period of time. And all I remember in my head, one of the things is that somehow or another, Bernie Kosar got to be known as the mother scratcher, and there would always be a drop for that when his name came up. And Dan was, he did a little bit of on-air hosting at the time, but predominantly was behind the scenes, but again, was very influential to how the place sounded, and it sounded like nothing else. It really was at a point in time when most sports talk stations were just doing everything really sort of the missionary position way. It was really something different, and I enjoyed it a lot. I listened to a lot of the shows, and as a matter of fact, my good friend Ron Glasnap, who was working as a producer at WKNR, I would rag on him at the time. When I wasn't ragging on him about being a Miami of Ohio grad, it would be about, hey, how come you guys don't sound more like HK? And Ronnie, of course, a very good sport. He would tolerate that from me. But years later, I would see that Dan was in Dallas once HK got away from the sports talk format, way prematurely, I thought, but Dan ended up in Dallas at the ticket, and I'll get back to that in a second, but I kind of want to cover a little bit of where I feel like Dan was one of the influences on me as I got going, because Ron Glasnap, again, he ends up reaching out to me and the late, great Dave Adams, really hurts to say the late, great still, but it was doing a show called Reality Check. He was starting at the new Sports Talk Network, and his co-host had stood him up, so he goes to put together another incarnation of it with me and Davey, and that lasted for a couple of years, because as much as WHK was a fun-sounding pirate ship kind of a place, you know, it still had corporate ownership, and it was still run that way. Sports Talk Network pretty much was a pirate ship top to bottom, so that got to be a little bit much for Ronnie, so we only lasted about 2 years on Reality Check, but that was a little bit of a predecessor to this show. And when we got going in 2007, spinning this off of FantasyDraftHelp.com and wanting to do a show where we would get into just not just fantasy sports, but all sports and anything beyond sports. Nothing is off topic. And when we did that, one of the things, and we directly ripped this off from Dan's show in Dallas, Bad Radio, Bob and Dan Radio, just so that nobody gets canceled even retroactively, we'll change the name slightly to Faye or Not Faye that they were doing. So we made that Whimper Pimp, and that was something where we saw that it was a very good segment and just kind of adapted it for our own purposes. Dan has joked on his show about how if you steal from him, you've stolen twice. I will say the good ones borrow, the great ones steal, which in and of itself is something I stole from somebody else. But it's one of those things, as I just said to Dan off air, that I just appreciate that everything he's ever done, he's done it basically. And I feel like where it's been very original is, my dad will laugh at me for this a little bit, of like, Richard, you're amusing yourself there again. But you have to have that mentality. You have to have the audience of one. And you have to have something that you think is good to go with, and if anybody else does or doesn't, or if they fart on it, well, who cares? You'll get it the next time out. And that's what I've always appreciated about Dan and taken from his approach. And when we got to mini episode 1340 back in the spring of 2021, I thought about reaching out, because as I just alluded to him off air, there aren't a lot of old WOUB alumni that I was up on where they were at career-wise. So there's just a few of them here and there, and Dan was the one I was aware of. But again, you know, me being a very unpresumptuous kind of a person, like I couldn't think of a good hook for inviting him on at the time. But like now that Dan has the dumb zone going, and we'll start to set that up, this is something where I definitely wanted to be a part of helping to promote that. So I missed all of this as it was happening. I only became aware of this about 6 weeks ago. I click on Dan's his Twitter bio. Once I saw him tweet, I'm like, oh, let's just see. And I didn't see the ticket in it. I'm like, oh, why did I not see the ticket in this? And then I found out everything that I missed from last summer. So during contract negotiations here, as the expiration was coming up for the Hang Zone, which had been on the air since 2020, that they were at a little bit of cross purposes here on some of the things that Dan and his co-host, Jake Kemp, wanted to do outside of there. And that impasse grew to be a little bit wider. And then eventually at the end of the day, they decided to go their own way. Hence, the Dumb Zone is born on Patreon. And I get into a little bit of a thing here. A cease and desist comes from the station. They're trying to enforce that, and it goes on for a while. And it played out in the media. And one of the things that makes me laugh is I go to Mediaite like almost on a daily basis, and it turns out they had a story on it last year. I'm like, how did I not see this? So there are these. It was covered in the Washington Post. And I have to say that with any of the dignitaries here in the FDH Lounge, whether it be Ron Glasnap, Ben Chu, I talk to a lot of these guys off air about the same things we talk about on air. And Ben and I in particular, we're always talking about like where things are going in the media and how things are evolving. And when I was telling Ben about this story, I said, Ben, this would be fascinating to me, even if I never worked with the guy, because it would still be a thing of like, wow, you know, big time show in one of the last markets that really matters. There's only a handful of markets that matter in terrestrial radio these days. The Metroplex is one of them. And guys deciding to go their own way, of their own volition, first of all, having the balls to do it, but also looking at it, and a word that Dan used, I've heard in many clips here, where he said that they decided it was a viable way to go. And it's like, wow, how does somebody decide that this becomes a viable way to go? This is a very interesting story. So we'll talk about that. I also want to get his thoughts on the ground about the Rangers and the Cowboys, because those are both of some interest nationally. But again, after that overlong windup here, I bring in Dan McDowell. And Dan, pleasure to have you on the show, my man. Thank you so much for making time for us.
No problem. Thanks for accommodating my schedule.
Good. Yeah. And I'll have to bear that in mind for the future, because I'm sure we'll want to invite you back. In looking at the teams here, again, Rangers starting out with spring training, and it's a situation where you have to think that like later last year this probably looked familiar to Bruce Bochy in a way, and like maybe we should have seen this coming, that the Rangers were going to have that run in him, because having Scherzer and DeGrom both go down, and you know, Scherzer with a spotty availability in the playoffs, DeGrom not at all. Like, this is a guy that had what turned out to be the corpse of Barry Zito when he was in San Francisco. You know, it's a big payroll, but not necessarily always the most efficient. Relying on cheaper, younger guys like Bumgarner and Posey. Here you got Josh Young. You got Evan Carter coming up and being a big part of things down the stretch. I'm sure a bigger part of it this year. So you got to think in looking at this, right? Like Scherzer, DeGrom, we're hearing they might be available the second half of the season, but whether they are or whether they aren't, I mean, Bochy's proven yet again. I mean, he's the master of making the most of what he has, even if that whole big payroll isn't there for him at all times.
Yeah, obviously Bochy's great. I think the big story with the Rangers is that they've proved that, you know, spending money does work, just because they kind of did their rebuild the opposite of, you know, the in-state rival, the Astros, of course, which had become in vogue, was strip everything down, lose huge, you know, trade everything for any kind of draft capital you can get. The Cubs kind of did the same thing. And that's a very good way to, you know, let them lose, bring the young guys up early. And then once they start getting good, you add big free agents to that or big trades. And the Rangers did kind of the opposite. They signed huge names, you know, Semien and Seager are the big ones they started with. And then, like you mentioned in the offseason, adding DeGrom. But then just they spent a ton of money on a really bad team. So they weren't joining this team ready to gel. But instead, then, they also had a pretty good farm system built up where now when the players were joining them, they could look to them to see, oh, this is how you be a Major League Baseball player. Like those are good guys to emulate. And, you know, and then kind of got rid of the, you know, less experienced manager, brought in a guy for big money, you know, lured him out of retirement. To, you know, a guy who's used to, like you said, used to dealing with quite a few different scenarios, and he was able to, you know, mix and match things the right way. And then, of course, you get to Major League Baseball, and it's, you know, are the Rangers the best team in baseball last year? Certainly not, but you can make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what it's come down to. It's really, you know, it feels like a cliche when people compare it to March Madness, but it really kind of is, because you had Tampa Bay that started the year historically great. Atlanta had a historically great lineup. Very painful to say shades of the 95 Indians, because that one came up short too. But, you know, contrasting it, and again, to today's Cleveland team, which is painful for me to do, you know, Cleveland never moves out of stage one of the whole teardown. Like, even when the team is better, they don't add anybody to it. But the whole thing, the way that Texas did it, like you said, it's the road less taken. But by the same token, and I guess I wasn't giving enough impetus necessarily in my mind to Bochy being there and to being able to be the difference maker, because it's not, like you said, it's not generally the way done. So they start adding pieces, and I was like, do they have enough? Like, they've added pieces, but minus having to do like a teardown, because again, they were a pretty bad team for a couple of years there. So the whole, you know, even them being a playoff team surprised me to some degree, largely because in my mind, I probably way undersold, I should say, the impact of Bochy. Did it surprise you as much that they were successful doing it a different way?
Didn't surprise me that it was successful eventually. That I thought this year was a bit too early for it, for sure. I didn't think they were even a playoff team this year. When DeGrom went down early, and you're like, well, okay, that was a good try, guys.
Yeah.
But and you know, as you mentioned, the old Indians 95 team or whatever, I guess I should really, you know, I pointed to the Astros to be, you know, a blueprint. The Indians kind of did that first, right? I mean, they perennially stripped down. But, you know, in that, you know, John Hart built up the farm system, brought all the young guys up. Then their bit was signing them to, you know, through their arbitration years and maybe even buying out a year of free agency early and betting on them early with, you know, Bell and Baerga and, you know, who am I missing? Tomei, Manny Lofton. Ramirez. Kenny Lofton. Yeah. So, yeah, what a he kind of actually started it there as far as, you know, building just with a bunch of young guys. And then they added, you know, El Presidente, and then they added Eddie Murray, you know, some key older veteran free agents to kind of, you know, fill things out and shepherd this thing, you know, into the World Series.
Yeah. Well, and it's so
good
funny
times,
when anybody mentions. When anybody mentions El Presidente, I have a sour memory of that, sadly enough, because he was the one that threw out the first pitch the night of, I think it was Game 6 of the 2016 World Series. And I remember going on my friend's podcast, Callous Remarks, They had me on, me being a Cleveland guy. I was like, this is the night, guys. El Presidente's here. famous yeah. last words with that Cubs series, the way that that got away. But this is a thing, just in looking at this with the Rangers, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it does seem like they're sustainable enough to be able to stick around a couple of years. You do have the young guys kind of coming up like Carter, and so you got that. Let me ask you for a little bit of inside input here. A guy who is on the verge of killing me right now on my long-term keeper league, Cole Wynn. Is this guy ever going to turn the corner?
You're asking the wrong person about that. I am,
okay. All right.
I can't say that I'm inside baseball guy for sure.
Worth a shot. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. But, yeah, Cole Wynn is that's a guy that, again, could be doing an awful lot for that rotation, should be. But I personally am impatient. But, yeah, that is something that, again, that would be a nice little turbo boost for the Rangers if he gets it going eventually here. Now, on the subject of the Cowboys.
So what is this fantasy league you're in?
Long-term, 10-year contracts. So you're getting guys lot of times, you know, high school or college.
I was once in the biggest league I was ever in. I had to get out of it. It was just too deep. It was 40-man rosters.
Okay.
Then after I was in it for like 5 years, everybody was getting rested, like they wanted it to be better. So then we had 15-man minor league rosters. And you couldn't find any, like everybody you had to acquire was, you know, an A-ball or just drafted. It was incredible. Too much, but it sounds like it might be up your alley.
That's kind of where we're at, because this is 40-man rosters, major and minor, but 20 teams. And so,
Oh, my God.
And I've always said that, like, my one trophy from that league is worth more than every other fantasy sports trophy I've ever had put together. Like, the football ones, you know, I know everybody knows how fluky football is, right? But it's like, yeah, that one there, that's like calculus, basically, and I'm not even, you know, like, really a math guy. So, yeah, so having somebody like Cole Wynn, I need to get the bang for my buck because he's on a $1 contract for 10 years unless I cut his ass, which is looking increasingly likely here. But, you know, it's one of those things where the nature of the beast is that somehow or another you can be the World Series champions and still not carry as high of a public profile as the Dallas Cowboys do year in and year out. So it's one of these things where I'm sure for you there's, like, some degree of familiarity with, like, coming from Cleveland because, like, here it's just, like, most years it's bleak, but it's almost always, like, the same thing. But that seems like the quasi-rich man's version of it there because I listen to you guys' show and I listen to your co-host there. And, you know, Jake, you know, hearing him be into the whole thing of like, oh, you know, this could be the year and this could get it going. It's like just looking at it from the outside, like I don't get it because I went back and looked at this. What, 7 divisional round losses since the last Super Bowl, 5 wild card losses. Like, here in Cleveland, and I guess I do get it because there's so many mouth breathers here that just year in and year out, like, oh, it's different this year. But it's like, how is anybody in Dallas looking at it like, oh, it's different this year when Mike McCarthy is still there? You know, Jason Garrett was there for a long stretch of mediocrity before that. Like, I just don't get year in and year out unless it's just that human nature of where people just think it's going to be different at this point.
Well, because, I mean, yeah, you got to think eventually it will, right? it's insane. They've had some very, very, very good teams that have fallen. You know, they haven't been to the championship game, let alone the Super Bowl. So, it kind of seemed to be the mindset of, you know, Jerry Jones and management for many years. If you would keep Jason Garrett and that was like they were always kind of on the bubble. They were never really, really bad. They were never, you know, Hugh Jackson bad or anything.
Right.
But they were always kind of on the bubble. So the last game of the season might knock them out of the playoffs, but that was kind of a playoff game. And so it kept the Cowboys high profile, kept everybody talking about them. Yeah, it's kind of baffling how people do just keep falling for it over and over. And I got to tell you, I do too. Mid-season, it just feels like, oh, man, maybe this is different. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're different guys. You know, Micah Parsons is different than, You know, DeMarcus Ware, who was here 10 years ago, and, you know, Dak is different than Romo, and you know, Dez is not the same as you know, CeeDee Lamb. Yeah, it's really weird. The players all change, and then it ends up being exactly the same. But they've had a couple times where they were the number one seed in the NFC, and they got bounced in the first round at home. And this year, they were the number two seed. Everything fell in place for them, and they get bounced out of the playoffs at home in the first round. So and I, right now I'm of the mindset of nothing will be different next year, but you know, they're going to be rolling. They're going to be 10-2. They're going to be whatever, 9-3. And it's going to be like, yeah, but you know, this time, you know, now we got so-and-so out of here and this is who knows. Like, you got to think it's got to happen at some point. Where the Browns, they're just kind of, they only make the playoffs once every few years, so it's like, okay, well, it's not that constant, you know. Obviously, the Browns, that was a cool story this year, for sure.
Yeah, true, but it's a thing where, with the Browns, like, everybody always, you know, in the off season, it's just like, oh, they straightened out their stuff, and like, it gets to training camp, and no matter how bad they were the previous year, like, in September, at least, there's still high expectations. And then again, you know, last year, it actually did materialize, but it's one of those things where the Browns, one of the things that they would do over a period of time that was like the most infuriating before they eventually just made me numb to all their stupidity was the whole thing of like create a hole, fill a hole. Like, look at what we did here. We got, I'm trying to think of the guy from LSU they took in the first round of 2013, but I think that was right after they cut Jabal Sheard. Like, it does, you know, the idea of an off season is to come out of it with less net holes than you had the previous time. You know what I mean? Like, that's, and they would never do that. You know, they would spend their entire draft replacing guys they just cut because the new regime didn't think those guys were worth anything. And invariably, they would go on to other places. So with the Browns, it seems like it was more predictable, though, right? Because, like, with the Cowboys, when you have that much talent and, you know, I always think it's pretty stupid whenever anybody does the supernatural thing of like only in Cleveland or, you know, like, no, there's actual explanations here, but it doesn't sound like you're any closer to finding one for the Cowboys than I am, because it's just a matter of underachieving year after year with a lot of talent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, around here, many have taken to just kind of blaming Jerry Jones overall, because it's kind of a trickle down effect. You know, when he had Jimmy Johnson here, you know, clearly Jimmy was making all the decisions, even if Jerry was called the GM.
Mm-hmm.
But once he left, you know, it's a trickle down of every year. There are a lot of excuses given. There are a lot of, you know, well, this and that. But as long as people are talking about us, that's great. And that's just kind of the mindset of the Dallas Cowboys. It kind of seems overall, you know, the thought is that all the players have big contracts. All the players get a radio show right away. All the players, you know, they're kind of about football, but they're about being the Dallas Cowboys more than, like, focused on football. And they don't have a Jimmy Johnson or a Belichick here kind of force them to block out all the noise. They're when they jog out to the field, you know, during a game, they go through a nightclub, you know, when the new facility they built, their training facility in Frisco, Texas, which is where the practice fields are and all that kind of stuff, they have a room in there that is specifically to help players with outside investment interests. So that's a meeting room. It's a kind of a big cafeteria-style room. But if you have a you know, an idea for a sunglass line or a hat line or just you know, you have some other interests, well, joining the Dallas Cowboys means we're going to cater to that. And we're going to give you space in the training facility. So there's not a separation of football and the glitz. It's all kind of together. And, you know, that in the long run is thought to be, again, we're looking for answers. How can this team continually be pretty good but continue to fail when it comes to the biggest games? And so that's the answer we're landing on right now.
Well, yeah, I didn't even know about that whole business program thing for the players. That's really interesting. And I would just say, like, in looking at that, I was sort of struck by, again, the fact that McCarthy survived the offseason, Sirianni survived. I'm looking at this and, like, in looking at historical trends, like I guess when Ron Rivera turned into Riverboat Ron, like I guess he had some level of success after that, but still not great success. Like anytime a coach really stands on the edge and looks into the abyss, like they might come back another year, 2 years, whatever. But I struggle to think of too many examples of coaches that seem to be dead men walking. They get the, not exactly the pardon from the governor, but the clemency or whatever, if you want to use that analogy, and then they go on to big things. It just doesn't seem like it ever happens once you get that close to being fired.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Nothing comes to mind, right?
I disagree with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anybody. I mean, look, hey, maybe McCarthy will be the first, and there'll be a lot of happy fans there when that is the case, and, of course, you'll be covering that with the Dumb Zone, which, speaking of which, by the way, I thought I'd heard on a previous clip that you guys years ago at the Ticket had come up for when there was a Cowboys game in Cleveland. Any similar plans for the Cowboys playing up here this year?
Are they in Cleveland this year?
Yes.
I haven't been paying attention.
I just looked at the schedule the other day for the first time. Yeah. So.
Then yeah. I will say yes, even though the other guys don't know about it yet.
This is an exclusive.
You know. Yeah, we can make our own schedule right now, and let's do it.
Well, from the day that we are taping this, which is Sunday, February 25th, you'll have about a week and a half to tell them because we're going to have this in the can for a little bit here. So any of the things that we say here won't come out until later on. So if I was to make a reference to the Cavs kicking the Mavs' ass on Tuesday night here, it'll be all the more funny if it doesn't happen, which the way the Cavs will look coming out of the break, sadly, might be the case. But did I hear also correctly that when you did the remote with the Ticket, did you do that from your brother's bar up here? Was that a place you did it from? I thought I remembered you saying that.
It's called the Brothers Lounge. You know that?
I was just about to invite you to give a plug. The Brothers Lounge in Lakewood. Okay. You beat me to the punch. I wanted you to give
my,
a plug.
My brother does work there. My brother is the manager there.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Their claim to fame is that Kevin Costner's band played there when they were in town filming for the terrible movie, the draft
really?
Movie. Yeah. So that
well,
was, I think that's their claim to fame.
My partner with the website, Jason Jones, loves that movie, but he is such a blind homer for all things Browns that, like, of course he would. And I've only ever
I mean,
seen
I love it in that way, you know.
Yeah.
I love it in a way, but, let's just take a look at it logically. I think he left the draft in New York and was back in Cleveland in, like, 20 minutes for the next draft pick. I don't know.
Well, that's the way that the entertainment industry works as far as realism and everything like that. But getting to that and getting to, again, the Dumb Zone and how it has evolved out of what you've done previously, I came across something here that led to a question. I'm always a little bit, perhaps unjustifiably, proud of myself when I come up with an angle for asking somebody something that perhaps nobody else might have thought of. But here we go. This is one where, so WHK starts in 94 in the sports talk format. And as I'm doing some research here and seeing and learning about the recent history of Dallas radio, getting ready for this conversation, so Dallas radio legend Mike Reiner starts up the Ticket in 94. So I'm wondering, pre-ubiquity of internet, social media, anything like that, what's the radio grapevine like town to town here? Like, when you guys were doing the thing at HK, was there any awareness whatsoever, like, hey, somebody else is trying to do sports talk in a completely different way in a bigger market? Any awareness whatsoever of what they were doing?
No, I had no awareness of that at all.
Okay.
And I remember hearing about the Ticket was with a friend of mine in Cleveland. We were at a New Year's Eve party, and I remember him drunkenly telling me, you know, he knew I was in sports radio.
Uh-huh.
And he told me he lived in Dallas, but he was from Cleveland. And he told me there's a station that started there. You should join it. And it's called The Ticket in Dallas. And
okay.
I think it was when I had just started at WHK. And,
okay.
I just remember hearing about it that way. But I had no idea that it was kind of similar in the, you know, it was on an AM signal. No one really took it seriously when it burst onto the scene. And then they were kind of doing things in a very unique way.
They were. And just out of curiosity, having been both places, it's a thing where I mean, was it a matter of necessarily a time and a place in terms of like the mid-90s versus you get into the new millennium and things are getting to be a little bit different and perhaps more internet influenced in that period of time? I mean, what are some factors that allowed the ticket to thrive in a way that WHK didn't? Now, I know that the Browns leaving probably was like the nail in the coffin in 96 for the station, but I do know it was always kind of hand-to-mouth previous to that. I always felt like I was the only listener who wasn't either a caller or faxer or both. I mean, it was very much a cult favorite kind of a deal. But, like, with the ticket also trying to kind of reinvent it, go in a new way and have fun with it in a way that was previously untraditional, what kind of allowed that to take off, do you think?
Also, I mean, the Browns was what came to my mind first. But 'cause I didn't get here till 1999. So,
okay.
You know, I was in Cleveland for 90. I don't remember. I don't think I was. I wasn't there at the very origin of WHK.
Gotcha.
And I'm trying to remember when exactly I left. Well, whenever WHK closed. If you've done that research, that's when I left.
Okay. I thought you were there till the end. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was there till the end for sure because a couple of sales guys that worked there bought a station in Warren, Ohio. And then hired me to come run that station into the ground, by the way. I think the main difference was football.
Okay.
So the Cowboys in the mid-90s are becoming the dynasty again. You know? They won 3 out of 4 years Super Bowls, and I believe the ticket even went on the air like the week of the Super Bowl in 1994. Mm-hmm. So and sent their people there. So everything was kind of based around the Cowboys, as for a large part it still is. And really, okay. at the WHK in Cleveland, very similar. I mean, everybody, even you mentioned the Rangers just won the World Series, but they're still not as big as the Cowboys. I mean,
sure.
The Cavs with LeBron,
yes.
the next Jordan, I don't think were ever actually as big as the Browns. They were, you know, way more successful, but if the Browns had won the Super Bowl the same year, you know, that would have dwarfed anything that happened with the Cavs. You know, football is the king in Cleveland, and football is the king here. And so probably if you were to just, you know, pull it down to one factor, Browns left, and the Cowboys were on top of the sports world.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a pretty reasonable explanation. Yeah, and that because, yeah, people were, I'm sure they were hungry to hear things being covered in a different kind of a way. So, you know, the ticket coming with an alternative approach to things, I'm sure that probably helped as well. By the way, speaking of HK, perhaps you can answer a question that Google could not. I kept looking on there to see Mr. Viking, whatever became of that guy. I know he was going to be going on ostensibly to do a show somewhere after that. I used to listen to his show a lot. Whatever became of that guy, do you know?
No, I remember he was a great guy. I liked him a lot, but I haven't heard from really any of the people back at WHK. I mean, I've heard from some of the people that I worked with,
yes.
but not like
yes.
the callers and stuff. I do know Mr. Viking did kind of partway work there a little bit, right?
Yeah, he was doing some shows. That was primary. I think on the weekends.
Or
I think that
end.
Was primarily. Yeah. What I knew him from, it's amazing how whenever you Google Mr. Viking, nothing comes up about radio for some reason. It's wild how that happens. But, yeah, those were some great days, and I really enjoyed all of that a lot. Now, again, moving on to what you're doing now, this is one of those things where, like I said, somehow or another I missed it all when this was happening last summer, even though it was in some media outlets that I might have been expected to see it in when you guys came to the end of the ticket and had the little period of time there where things had to be sorted out, and then they did get sorted out. Now, it's a thing where, like I said before, I find it interesting, not merely because, again, you're a guy that I worked with back in the day in Athens and have followed what you've been doing, but like I said, if I didn't know you, I'd still find this interesting. Like, this is, you know, the very successful midday show in one of the last markets that really matters. Unlike Cleveland, I mean, they basically pay guys in expired ho-hos in this market. They're the nighttime guy on one of the two sports talk stations here quit, and for whatever reason publicly revealed that he was making $20,000 a year gross. Now, that is gross, Dan. That's not net. So, you know, at least he grossed $20,000. But you're in one of the last markets that really matters, the Metroplex being a huge one and being in that spot there. And to willingly go another way, it's a fascinating story. It just really is, because it's also like, what does this say about where radio is going at this point in time? What does this say about where the subscription model is going at this time? So unique set of circumstances. You had to have the following that you guys had to make it plausible, but it's like, I know obviously you and Jake and Blake and everybody think about this on the micro level, how it affects yourselves. You've alluded on the air to thinking about how it affected things in the macro level as a labor story. But beyond that, as far as like what it potentially says about where media is going, have you thought about it at all in that way on the macro level? Have you allowed yourself to kind of step back from it? Like, what does it mean that something like this is now plausible?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that was part of our thought process as we went into our negotiations. And 100% I expected to still be on terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. Because there are these other things popping up that seem interesting, I wanted to dip my toe into that world as well. Mm-hmm. And they ended up, you know, throwing us in because we wanted, you know, our contracts were very restrictive and specific. Mm-hmm. And in other radio station companies, you know, parent companies, I guess, we were aware that some people are allowed to, you know, host a podcast, but then they can do a radio show. And what really the podcast to me is allows you to spread your legs a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's kind of an old ticket reference. Stretch your legs is the real term. But once we had an athlete in studio who said he wanted to spread his legs, and we all thought that was funny. So I'm giving an inside bit of a bit you never heard. And even people in Dallas heard it like 20 years ago. So not a reference that more than three people would even get. So I apologize.
Sometimes those are the best ones though, Dan.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I thought that the two, in my head, the two things can really complement each other. For instance, if you are, you write for the local newspaper, a couple of guys I worked with on the ticket did, they were writers as well. So the newspaper mm-hmm. would hire them to write, and that's good because now they get pub in the newspaper. Maybe I read that article and I say, "Oh, you're on the ticket. I'll go try and listen." You know, same thing, vice versa. So that's what we wanted. The contracts were going to be very restrictive and not allow any of that. And I kind of thought if we are to sign back on with the in terrestrial radio and have a restrictive contract like that, this world is kind of blowing up and it could kind of pass us by, where if we get into it 5 years from now, maybe it will be much different. And I'll be 5 years older, of course, and maybe not able to get into it. So, a lot of factors went into it. I thought possibly, with our track record, we could maybe even just get another radio job in town that would allow us to do the outside things we want to kind of do. Maybe do some YouTube streaming, maybe some podcasting. We didn't really have any concrete idea, I should say. But now that actually we're out here and have been out of the terrestrial radio world, I'm not sure it's that attractive to try and go back, even if they would let us do it all. I think maybe just fully staying out is going to be the way to go. So as far as big picture, you can kind of think of it in like newspapers in a way, or, radio is, I have satellite radio in my, my vehicle. So why would I ever listen to a music station? I could listen to satellite music and never have a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big believer in radio still. I'm a big audio fan. I'm glad you're not doing video the way I look today. I would rather do just audio.
Okay.
But it's not the way the world is going. You kind of got to throw a little video in there as well. And I'm still a big believer in local talk radio. But I think local talk radio local live talk radio is there is an immediacy to it. There is you can't listen to a podcast about something that's happening, right now necessarily. You got to wait a little mm-hmm. bit. you know, streaming, you know, YouTube streaming, all that kind of stuff, and who knows what's going to exist 5 years from now. You know, they just keep getting more stuff and better outlets. So who knows what's going to, you know, how it's going to be. And now I'm in that world, and I kind of like it.
Well, yeah, and that's where...
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. You did. I wanted you to kind of paint the picture what your thought process was, and those were some interesting thoughts there. I want to say also, too, that in terms of things that you'd said previously, it's what's kind of funny to me is when I see some of the reaction to you guys, whether it be on your YouTube comments or now on Reddit or anything else like that, and where anybody is like, you know, trying to read you guys' mind and attribute motives or anything like that, it's always very funny because that's the furthest thing from anything that I really kind of subscribe to. And I'd rather just like listen to what people say and sort of discern from that. And what's funny is that anybody that like immediately, there was a whole lot of cynicism that I came across with, oh, these guys are just waiting it out to go take a job at the Freak. And I was like, no, you guys really believe that this was viable, because when I listened to the Akash Singh conversation you guys had, it sort of all fell into place to me. Like, I'm thinking to myself, there had to be somebody that was telling these guys that this was viable to go do. And so with the wild amount of success he's had, Flagrant 2 with Andrew Schultz, you know, it's one of those things where anybody that was, like, they might not have understood what you guys are doing. And that's fine. Like, you don't necessarily have to understand that. But then, like, when people are like, oh, they must be trying to go do such and such. If somebody had just listened to you talking about that in your own words, what the thought process was, I think they would have understood where you guys were coming from and that you really were looking at this as a venture that you could make happen and not necessarily have to go back to anybody else. I mean, who knows what the future may hold. But as far as, like, intending this to be something that you guys were going to be at, clearly that was your intention, was to build something that you guys could be at and stay at.
Yeah, and Akash, you know, does have a very successful podcasting career, and he was, you know, pitching us on That's a Possibility, just realizing what the station's revenue was and what we were making. And realizing what he was making was incredible amounts more than we were making. You know, I did not doubt his message early on, which was if the entire ticket somehow was doing their own thing together, that it could, we could make, you know, be incredibly profitable. I wasn't positive about just us leaving. I knew we had a fair following, but I didn't have any idea that, you know, we would be able to get, I had no thought on how much, you know, how many people would subscribe, you know, to a podcast. So, I mean, I'm happy that, you know, enough have that at least could help get us through this 6 months, non-compete 6 month thing that we had to go through. And then, I mean, if you've been reading up on us, you know that we started podcasting behind a paywall, but then got sued by the ticket's parent company, Cumulus, to try and stop us from doing that, saying that we were violating our non-compete. They were unsuccessful in that, you know, so we continued to podcast, continued to do so behind a paywall. And now we're trying to do so, you know, get some advertising sales going with our podcast as well. So, you know, I guess the ceiling is higher possibly for, you know, monetary, what we could make, you know, in this world. But the floor is lower too. There's no like guarantee. We're in a world where, you know, you can month to month subscribe. And so you could bail next month if we're not doing well. Whereas if we are with the parent company, then, you know, we have a long-term contract. So you're trading that stability for, you know, being able to, control your own, I hate saying control your own destiny, because if it's destiny, then you can't control it. Right.
Well, but yeah.
Just control your own outcome or your own life.
Well, the ceiling for...
And go to Cleveland and for the Cowboy game if you want to, you know?
Exactly. Completely your decision. You don't have to sell the ticket on doing a remote. So that is excellent. I will definitely be in the audience when that happens, no question about it. But as far as it goes with that, the ceiling and the floor thing, that's one of the things I think that we all think of when we see what you're doing. Like, wow, that's a thing where a lot of people wouldn't do that. The other thing is, too, and where I give you a lot of credit, and I think this goes to, I think, some of the characteristics that I've seen in you over a period of time is that a lot of people would be, I'd like to think I wouldn't be, but a lot of people would be too big of marks for themselves to walk away from that, because there's a lot that's wrapped up in the identity of it. Like I said, look at this market before. Like, people will, you know, sell a kidney to work for, you know, minimum wage at the radio stations here in town. Like, that's the way most people are cut out. You're in a good size market, and it was the thing where it wasn't working for you guys, and you were willing to go do this. I think that's a credit to you and Jake to look at it this way, and for Jake being a guy that was a ticket lifer.
Yeah, and I kind of felt like a ticket lifer being there for 20
sure.
years.
Sure, close, you know? Yes.
But yeah, I guess, you know, maybe even being in this market is part of what gave us the confidence, too, because the Cowboys, you know, we cover the Cowboys a lot, and the Cowboys are kind of a national brand, too. So mm-hmm. if we kind of just continue to do similar to the show we've been doing, we think that that could be a thing that is successful. I mean, the jury's still out. We're not, like, you know, totally destroying
sure.
yet.
Oh, sure. And that's, you know, in terms of content creation, I'm always fascinated how other people are doing it, because, again, you know, one of the things, and when I first emailed you about coming on the show here, and when I was just saying that, like, obviously you cover Dallas stuff, but I think you have a lot of stuff that actually goes beyond that and is relatively universal. I'm always interested, and you've said on the show that, like, hey, if you're not liking what we're doing in this one segment, we got it broken up so you can get to the other stuff that you do like. And I can say I kind of relate to that, because, like, with our show, like, yeah, you might not like this segment we did about, you know, the Hamas war. Maybe you'll like this interview with George the Animal Steel. You probably won't like both of them, but, you know, or maybe you will, hopefully. But, like, that whole thing, you know, it's a Dallas-centric show in the one sense. It's where you guys came from. You have the regular segments in there. Probably my favorite clips that I've heard that have been Dallas-oriented have actually been on the Mavericks stuff, because that's been fairly kind of in-depth, and I like a lot of the nerdy basketball stuff. So you guys have been good on the coverage with that. But a lot of other stuff, you know, the Dan's massage story, the death penalty anti-advocate, I guess you would say, Liz Brunig, talking about why the death penalty is a bad thing and everything like that. So you're giving a lot of things outside of the thing for the Dallas sports fan. So it's good that you're kind of universalizing it in a way that you need to for the internet, because that was always my thing. Like, Sports Talk Network back in the day, sometimes the owner would toggle back and forth with, like, Sports Talk Cleveland as an identity, and I would scream, like, why are you doing this? Like, the internet goes out to the whole world, you know? So it's a thing where, and that's the advantage you have over terrestrial radio. So now it's a thing where I think you guys are being smart and you're keeping the Dallas coverage in there, but you got an awful lot of stuff for guys like me that really don't care too much about Dallas sports.
Yeah, and I don't think we're consciously trying to be different because we're now on the internet. I think it's, mm-hmm. I think we are definitely different just because we're trying to navigate this medium of, well, we might not have had Liz Brunig on in the past just because, you know, a 12-minute segment would have been just kind of, you know, not really enough. Is that enough to tell your story? You know, she was with a death row inmate the week that, you know, he died, and he knows mm-hmm. his family very well and all that kind of stuff. And so we're trying to, you know, like I said, spread our legs with that and just try to do different stuff. Like, we were always interested in that. We would have had a guest on, you know, that wasn't necessarily Dallas sports, but we mm-hmm. also might not have been able to get as in depth. And then now you also have to have a governor in your head of, well, when, you know, when's too much? We don't want to, you know, because I do think sometimes, I've referenced this on our show before, like, I know Rogan is the king, but, mm-hmm. You know, 3 hours of somebody on there, sometimes you have to really listen to a lot of dead stuff to finally get the meat, you know?
Yes.
So it's like, if we have an interesting guest, you know, there has to be a time that we want to cut them off. We want to kind of be a variety show, but not, you know, just two guys with one guest, and that's the whole topic of the whole show type thing. You know, we had a local stand-up comedian in the other day, and we talked about his career a bit, but then he just kind of, you know, rolled with all the other show topics that we were going to do anyway, if he had not been here. So that's, you know, we're just trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah, Well, again, it's
trying
all,
to be a little bit
all,
different, you know.
Well, yeah, that's what we're all trying to do, right? Try to find that sweet spot that works and that can differentiate and everything like that. And this is one of these things too, where I mean, I see what you're doing, and my aforementioned friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu, when he and I sometimes we have our conversations on air, sometimes off air about where all this stuff's going, and like I've made the point to him before that like. The people in like 20 to 25 years are they're going to be sitting there laughing at us. Like we're living through anybody that was like in the 2010s and the 2020s trying to figure this out, maybe to a certain extent the 2000s, like eventually the monetization and all this kind of stuff, like they're going to have answers. But we're the people who are, we're basically like the guinea pigs. If you look at it like the spectrum of time, Dan, it's like, you know, they're going to have the answers eventually, and pretty soon it's going to be a handbook. Like, oh, okay, you go to set up your own show and you do this, and you know, there'll be an entire section of the handbook for when you break away from a terrestrial station and do your own thing. But for right now, you're basically writing the handbook for people in the future when it comes to that subtopic. It seems like.
Yeah, that part is kind of exciting to think about. You said something in the very beginning that I thought was a great line.
Okay.
That I will steal. The way.
Okay.
If you want to steal from me.
Yeah.
And the phrase, if you steal from me, you've stolen twice. I stole that from somebody else here in Dallas. So, but I will credit him usually when I talk about him. But you said that what the ticket did early on and what WHK did in their inception was like they moved it off of just missionary sports talk.
Yes.
And like, so I guess that's kind of the way I feel in our head that we can possibly do that now, you know, sliding into podcasting because we have more freedom and more ability to, you know, shape things the way possibly we thought it should have been, but we can't because there's a break coming up in 3 minutes. So we were still doing it differently than, you know, at WHK, we were doing it differently than they did at WKNR, if that's still a thing in Cleveland. They were like your dad's sports talk radio station, and we were,
right.
We were trying to be the wild guys, and
right.
That's kind of what we could be now. You know, if you hopefully in 10 years or however many years you'll look back and say, yeah, that's what, you know, moving, you know, the terrestrial radio guys moving into this forum, that was more of a, boy, it looks like terrestrial radio was missionary back then.
Well, you know, and I will say after putting you over pretty substantially throughout the course of the show, I don't mean to point out anything that's a downer here, but I guess I will. Like, as much as you're saying that it's exciting, and there would be a certain amount of that if I were in your shoes. Sure, they're like, oh yeah, okay, people are going to be watching and seeing what we do and everything like that. But it's like, at the same time, wouldn't you rather be the guys like 20 years from now that like all they got to do is go do the stuff that the earlier guys figured out? I mean, there's less glory in being that guy, but there's also less risk and potentially more money in it. So I guess it's all in how you look at it. Like the people in the future that are going to be like, oh, we need to learn from this on what these guys did, on what they did and what they didn't do and whatever. Like, I don't know what it says about my character, but I'd rather be that guy that can just take the lessons and make the money. But you're helping people in the future,
yeah, well,
Dan, one way or another.
Well, Kurt Flood didn't make any money, you know?
True.
If you're familiar with Kurt Flood.
He died, you know, pretty sadly, though, you know, didn't he? So
I don't know that. I just read a book about Marvin Miller recently, and, you know, some of the early guys who were trying to help free agency era usher into Major League Baseball didn't really see those rewards. So, yeah, you're right. I'd rather be Corey Seager or whoever and
yes.
Get the huge contract and not have to worry about all this other, you know. Like, if there was a better template for, you know, well, how do we hire a business person to, you know, to sell advertising? I don't know how to sell advertising. I don't know how to do, you know, any of this. I don't know how to name a show. We named the show on a whim, you know, one Saturday. Now we're kind of stuck with it. Like, I'm not sure that I'm happy about it. But, you know, I guess it fits. We are the dumb zone.
It's a strong brand anyways, you know. I mean, you know, say what you will about it. I mean, I have some familiarity on the Flood thing because I had somebody a couple of years ago try to hook me into something about, hey, if you do some research, maybe we can write a screenplay about Kurt Flood. And somebody who supposedly had a, you know, a tie to Kurt Flood's family, and that turned out to be a false lead anyways. But, I got to be pretty familiar with his story. It's amazing how much I had to go to the library to do it, which is very old school, but, like, there was not nearly as much on the Internet about him as I thought there would be. But, it might be a little dramatic to see you guys are Kurt Flood because, for as much as everything really, really went in the crapper for that guy. You guys are doing well here with the new venture. And, again, I'm enjoying watching it, as it's going along here. And I will look forward to later in 2024 being able to see the Dumb Zone in Cleveland for a Cowboys-Browns game. And anything else that's going on with the show that people should know about, Dan?
No, I always am not, I always tell people I think it'll be better in the future. We're just, once we can stop thinking about business stuff and start focusing on just preparing a show every day, that's, it's bound to make it better. But who knows? I'm glad you told me about the Browns Cowboys game. Obviously, the schedule is not out yet.
No, we don't.
The NFL
know
does like a big primetime event for that, right?
Yeah, they always have to call attention to themselves. Roger Goodell is the master of that. So yes, they'll do their whole schedule release thing, and we'll find out when the specific date is then. And that'll be something to look forward to once that comes about. And I will say, to bring it full circle, Dad, that is something you gave me one more thing I'm going to steal from you as far as, like, what have you got going on with the show, Rick? Well, we're getting better. I think we're getting better day by day with it. I'll present that as hot breaking news as we go forward here. By the way, too, perhaps you'd like to promote, I think you said when you were in France that with your upcoming trip, you guys were going to be, I think, potentially releasing some material that you're now free to talk about that you weren't previously. So that might be an inducement for people.
Yeah. Some of the things things that we were free to talk about,
mm-hmm.
our lawyers said, yeah, go ahead and talk about them. We were still concerned about more litigation and kind of mm-hmm. didn't want to go through that because even
right.
though you would deem us as having come out on the good end of it, like they sued us to stop us from podcasting. Well, the settlement agreement that we ended up with basically says you can keep doing everything you were doing previous to the lawsuit. So the lawsuit was worthless, except for it did signal across the board to everybody who works for that company, if we'll sue these guys, we'll sue you.
Right.
And what we walked out of there with is like 70,000. I don't even know exactly how much of lawyers' fees. And
mm-hmm.
most of our lawyers are working for free. So that's the what a big company can do. They've got lawyers. They've got money. They but if they tell a guy, hey, we might sue you, you're probably just going to not do what they say. Anyway, so we were very concerned about getting more lawyers' fees. And so we didn't say anything. And we don't want to, say anything bad about the people that we work with or the place that we work either.
Sure.
But we do want to just – there is a lot to going to court and being sued and going through a trial or a hearing. I don't think it was actually a trial. We never got to that point. But we are going to be releasing some of that information. We got a lawyers roundtable scheduled to record. We're going to record it live to tape this week. And then, while I'm on vacation in March, going to visit my daughter who is in France, we will air some of those episodes and get some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Which
excellent.
People that followed us from the ticket are particularly interested in.
Yes, and again, for somebody that 99% of that stuff, I'm sure I don't know, even after doing a little bit of research here. But I always find dirt interesting. So just like on that level, you will appeal to people, right? I mean, and like you said, you're not talking trash about anybody, you're not whatever. But anytime you can hear any kind of inside story of how things happen, that does appeal to people. So I think there would be. There's definitely going to be value when you guys go to do that. And I get what it's like to, like, be weary of, like, getting into things because, like, the Sports Talk Network days were, like, so long ago. But it feels like, and some of the things we did to help keep that thing afloat, it feels like the statute of limitations still aren't out on that. And the night that we did the Art Modell thing and busted away from WKNR under cover of night, or I guess it would be the Ursay rather. It was more the Ursay because it was filling up trucks and stealing away under cover of darkness. So yeah, so you get into stuff like that, and it can be a long time. I can understand, Dan, before you're ready to talk about it without feeling a little paranoid. But I'm glad that point in time has come for you guys because people will enjoy hearing about it. As they can enjoy hearing about all of your stuff, look up The Dumb Zone at Patreon. Check it out on YouTube also. And, yes, there is an at sign in the address here, as we talked about off-air previously.
Yeah.
So that is in there.
Or just regular, your Apple Podcasts around there now, too. I want to ask you this. So
yes.
were you and are we running over time? Do you got to go?
No, no, we're
good.
Out? We're good.
On this podcast? Okay.
We're good.
So WHK, were you a heavy into WHK? If you know,
yes.
Mr. Viking, perhaps you were.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
That level of it, the Mother Scratcher drops. I know that I'm trying to, as somebody who was very anti-Belichick and pro-Kozar, I remember that there wasn't much sentiment for that on the station at the time. I remember, I think, Pat McCabe was pro-Belichick. I remember, I think, Rizzo was pretty pro-Belichick. So,
it was great.
I listened a lot. Yeah, I definitely,
I've
a lot.
I've got a lot of those, I've got a lot of that audio, you know.
Do you?
I've got Pat interviewing Belichick for an hour.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I've sent that to him in the last decade. I was going to say recently, but everything seems recent. So I wanted to say this. So I've had this idea for some time,
mm-hmm.
and wondered, you know, I don't want you to steal the idea because we've already talked about stealing from each other.
Yes.
So
okay.
I'm going to put this is a verbal
mostly
contract.
Mostly me from you. Okay, verbal contract.
But I don't know what kind of appetite there is for this. It would probably be,
okay.
It's very niche. So because podcasts, I don't know, podcasts fall into certain categories. We're trying to do something that's somewhat different, was more of a variety show, kind of like a radio show, but it's now on the podcasting platform. Whereas a lot of podcasts are two guys just talking, two people, sorry, ladies. You can identify as whatever you want. Or, you know, sometimes it's just guests, so it's guest-based, like Marc Maron. I'm not going to tune into a Marc Maron podcast if he's interviewing someone I have no interest in.
Sure.
Or sometimes it's very, you know, inside something. And I've always wanted to do a WHK podcast, just like a, would it be weekly? Would it be monthly? Probably couldn't do it, but kind of just a series. Maybe it only has a certain life. Maybe it's 10 episodes, but just getting people. And I thought about this after Les died, the great Les Levine.
Yes.
And
R.I.P.
I thought, I wish I did this before. Because when we were in Cleveland doing our show, we did have Les on.
Oh, okay.
But that was like a, you know, probably a 20-minute, maybe a half hour he was on for two segments, something like that. But it really wasn't, you know, I was also broadcasting to a Dallas audience.
Right.
But I would have loved to just talk to Les, you know, in depth about the behind the scenes at WHK, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, sometimes Marc Maron used to be, I think I could do this because Marc Maron used to be like a, the doorman at comedy clubs. He was also a part-time comedian as well. And so he knew all these big names and that helped him launch his podcast because he could get whoever on, Janine Garofalo or just, you know, big comics from the day.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure I could book a lot of these WHK people is what I'm saying. You know, would that be interesting to you to hear me talk to Pat McCabe for an hour?
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. And if there's
how
if
niche
there's any
would that
room,
be? I suppose, you know, would there be, just, I mean, would it get 10 downloads and that's it? I just,
the question, the question kind of answers itself, but it's one of those things where I've seen this kind of a thing of like where there's an audience of like people that never experienced it the first time but love hearing about it. There is a certain, and that's what you'll be counting on. You'll be counting on the audience of like people hearing about, there's this magical station that was like the greatest station that nobody ever knew. Like that's what it's got to be. I think that's what's got to be your hook. And as somebody that's done a fair amount of writing and everything like that, always looking for the hook, that's what you would need. I promise not to steal it. I would ask to be able to help participate as a super fan from back in the day. Anything I could do as like a guest producer, I would be honored
to
be
able
to do.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe you could be a part of it.
Yes, yes. In any small kind of a way, Because again, I'm just somebody that was listening to it on the radio all the time, and again, a station that kind of helped me through a rough period of life, because my first couple of years out of school did not go swimmingly for me. So that was a period where, you know, listening to WHK was one of the few joys that I could really count on at that period of time. So yes, this is an excellent idea, and I don't know what kind of a crossover there necessarily was between WHK and subsequently Sports Talk Network, because I always felt like we sort of existed somewhat in that general tradition, because it was the same kind of non-type of missionary position radio that everybody else was doing, and being Cleveland-based, I always felt like it's sort of, you know, but there was never an overt thing, and the fact that it was Kenny Rhoda's webmaster that was in charge of the place, there wasn't any sort of overt glorification of WHK there, but it was a connection that I always felt being there. So this is an interesting idea, and yes, to be continued, I suppose, along these lines as far as this project here. And yes, promise not to steal, and ask to humbly contribute in any way I can. But again, I think it's a winner, but it's what you would expect me to say as a super fan of the greatest station that most of the world ever heard of. But something that you were, of course, a vital part of, and something to help launch you along the way, subsequently to the ticket, now to the Dumb Zone. And again, whether it be along those lines as far as working together to help get that thing going or whatever subsequently, we look forward to charting what you got going on with the Dumb Zone here on the show. So Dan McDowell, please do not be a stranger. Love to have you back on as you are growing and growing this thing.
Okay, Rick, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your time, Dan. Thank you, and thank you everybody for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1716.